Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Administrator. In general, thank you for your service and to your task force that you have with you. Boy, it seems like one problem after another, and now you've got the hurricane to deal with. I do think it's a real good point. If that much damage was done with 120-mile-an-hour wind, what if it had been 200, which we've seen hit certain parts of the Gulf Coast in the past? But I know you'll assess that damage as quickly as you can, and that will be a part of the request the administration will send. You know, I am worried about safety, of course, but I also am worried about, morale and direction within NASA. I mean, until we return to flight, the thing that you really are meant to do is going to be on hold. And I'm worried about that. I also am worried about, and I've discussed this with you, about some of the gaps between the launch systems, the one you have now, and what you plan for the future, what that's going to do to the workforce. How are you going to deal with this? Are you going to expedite the decisions, or are you going to extend the time that we use the current launch systems? We've got a potential problem in the next few years. In that connection also, I think you got a real problem with having more and more demands placed on you, and you're having to basically move money around. I understand, for instance, the Hubble Space Telescope supporters are pushing back, wanting more money. You're either going to have to ask for more money, or you're going to have to move it from somewhere else, and you're starving a lot of other good programs. So I really am concerned about NASA and our plan for the future beyond just return to flight. What is our plan? I know that there's space exploration and going to Mars and all that, but there's a long way between where we are and getting there, and I'm worried about how we're going to pull that off. I guess I ask a whole collage of questions there, but rather than asking you one after the other, why don't you just speak to the general propositions that I've laid out?
Yes, sir. No, I appreciate the sentiment, and I'll do my best to respond. First and foremost, the President on January 14th issued what is the strategy, articulated that, submitted the budget 3 weeks later. So the first major step in that process has been accomplished. The second step is for Congress to endorse that and to appropriate the funding that he's requested. That's our fondest expectation and hope that the Congress can see their way clear to do that in this appropriations process, and we're confident that we can find our way clear to do that, which would accomplish much of what you've already referred to. It covers the return to flight challenges. There certainly are costs that we need to accommodate within that, but I think we can accomplish that. We've certainly worked through a number of options and alternatives for that. And moving forward, we think what we've done here is prioritize the approach necessary in the President's budget request that was made in February to emphasize the priorities that he's directed in this strategy that was articulated. So that's the process we're moving down the road on. There's nothing I see that's insurmountable. Certainly the events of a hurricane and other things are constant new challenges that you've got to go wrestle with, but this is part of life, and there's no doubt about it, we're going to continue to wrestle with that. But there's nothing I see at this juncture that would make or compromise our capacity to accomplish the goals that he's laid out in those objectives. And as it pertains to your first question, I believe, which was what do we do in the longer term in terms of retirement of shuttle and then the beginning of the crew exploration vehicle through Project Constellation, that occurs at the end of the decade. The immediacy of the challenges we faced right now, the first one is return to flight in order to complete the International Space Station. We think we're on track to do that. New obstacles have mounted, but even those are surmountable in terms of the kinds of challenges we're facing. And how we address the end of the decade is something we're going to continue to iterate. But in the meantime, nothing precipitous will be made in order to preclude any of the options necessary to assure a transition between those two programs. Finally, I would just observe that the morale of the agency, from my assessment, has improved drastically by our focus on a mission objective. What the President delivered on January 14th is a focus, a set of priorities, a clear enunciation of what we do in this agency. And that's done more to improve the focus, attention, and morale of all of our colleagues than any other singular act. We're focused on the mission objectives. We're going to get there.
One other concern that I've had for years, and I've pressed the point, I've discussed it with you, your predecessors, a vision for the agency is important for the workers. But to have the support of the American people, it's got to be more than that. they've got to see some tangible results. I've always argued we get scientific, medical, technological, all kind of benefits from our space program. The idea of just going to Mars doesn't, frankly, excite a lot of people in my state. They don't really care whether there's water up there or not. They'd rather have asphalt on the roads. But if you can show, or we can have a process of programs to get what you learn from that, the benefits, into the private sector, then you got a deal. Don't forget that.
Yes, sir.
You know, just some esoteric, visionary, you know, space flight is not enough. And if NASA doesn't continue to focus on, you know, that sort of transfer and programs like the Earth Sciences area, you're going to pay a price because you're going to lose support of the American people. And when you lose their support, then you lose our support.
Sure.
And we need you to help us have the information and the ammunition and the technology and science tech transfers that show the people we're getting a direct benefit. You want to?
Absolutely, Senator. I could not agree with you more. Every single dollar we spend on exploration is spent right here on this planet. And as a consequence, it has tangible benefits that go well beyond the scope of simply achieving those exploration goals. The technology we've developed just in recent years contributed to the development of cataract detection, heart pumps, all the different things that we see in and day out life that were a consequence motivated by the technology we developed. We anticipate that as a consequence of pursuit of this strategy, we're going to see at least that and a whole lot more. It's a motivation in order to develop those technologies for greater, broader applications. And we've certainly focused on that approach of how to categorize all those different consequences that are there. It is really quite astounding, and it's something, again, contributes to a much broader understanding of our technology development and economic improvements in this country all by itself in terms of where we progress in terms of economic development efforts. That's had a tremendous consequence and one we will continue to focus on as a preeminent priority in this particular effort.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hutchison.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think most of us up here are co-sponsors of the reauthorization of NASA, along with the President's vision to try to go forward. However, we're also, I at least am concerned about the potential gap in the CEV being ready and not having shuttles for a year or so if we don't have a certified shuttle. I was ready to offer an amendment to the bill, but was told that you didn't want the shuttle to be recertified in case there might be a gap. So I want to work with you, but I want to make sure that we're not going to have a gap that can't be overcome or that would stop the progress that we're making on the station and the experiments that would be going. So how would you address that?
Absolutely. No, thank you, Senator. And we are delighted to work with you to accomplish that goal. Our objective right now, again, as you've just alluded, is to complete the International Space Station. That is some 25 to 30 flights. We're continuing to work through the calculus of that. We've met with all the international partners and lined up all those modules. Whether that occurs on what date and what exactly will be the effect of that is going to be a consequence of time. How rapidly do we get back to return to flight and what the sequence of events could be. Any number of different things could alter that schedule. At present, we're looking at something that will accomplish that task by the end of this decade. Our partners have signed off on that. They're all in agreement that that does meet the objectives of each of us in the International Space Station partnership. Along the way, too, we're concurrently developing, under Project Constellation, the Crew Exploration Vehicle. The response we've received in the broad agency announcement that was put out here just a few months ago has been overwhelming. We've gotten better than 1,200 different respondents and have necked that down now to about 7 or 8 major teams that are now moving forward. And what we're looking to is by 08, the development and the first spiral of Project Constellation, which will be an unmanned vehicle, to be accomplished by that time. And it looks like we can accomplish this task. It has been a remarkable interest from not only the traditional aerospace interests and kind of industrial prowess that we see across this country, but a whole bunch of different companies and organizations and efforts that have gone into looking at this very differently. And achieving that by the end of this decade appears now to be within range. It's something people are excited about. They're ready to pursue. And all that stands in the way of achieving that task is the endorsement by the Congress of the President's budget request for this coming fiscal year. If we get that, we're on our way towards that task, and I think we can close that gap in the time ahead.
Well, let me just say that I certainly understand that you don't want to take any money away from the future by having that continuation and the certification. However, we also have to look down the road at all of the things that happen that we don't expect to happen, and I want to make sure that we don't have a gap that really is unacceptable from a scientific standpoint. So let's work on something that doesn't take away from the CEV or our long-term goal, but also recognizes that in the next decade, a lot of things could happen, from a hurricane to some other delaying, something doesn't, a part doesn't come in or doesn't fit, or you don't have the progress you think you're going to have.
You bet, absolutely. And I couldn't agree more, Senator. And again, we will work with you. The one issue I would caution, and I invite General Stafford to comment on this as well, is, you know, the issue of certification is something I really want to steer off of as a general proposition, because it implies that somehow we have eliminated all of the risk that would be involved in something. We're never going to do that. This is always going to be a risky proposition. We will never eliminate that. And what we're doing right now that is short of that term is, again, tearing down every single one of the three orbiters to assure that we've done this in a very, very extensive major modification effort to bring it up to an industrial standard we think gives us the best shot at flying those vehicles for the balance of time that it has available to complete the International Space Station, to do what we've committed to do, to yield the science return that we'd always hoped for. And I think we're within range of that. Just on the efforts we see today on Expedition 9, the returns we're getting off the science is really compelling. And so the opportunities to do that, I think, are ahead of us. And in order to do this within the achievable is what our objective is, and to do it in a way that guarantees we do it to the best of our ability.
Before my time is up, because I understand that issue, but the last thing I wanted to bring up is the issue of Russia, which also ties into this. They're apparently, their patience is wearing thin on borrowing their shuttles. So what is the situation with Russia? Are we going to have something with them that would be ongoing after 2006 when the contract is up? And is it going to be something that helps us get through this period and then we will be able to carry our load again?
No, thank you, Senator. The Russian performance as a member of the International Space Station Partnership has been exemplary. I mean, they have done an amazing job. And they are as professional and as focused to the task to accomplishing these efforts as we ever could have imagined. Any doubts about that have been absolutely eliminated. They have done a fantastic job. We are in the middle of negotiation now with the completion of what's referred to as the balance agreements, which is for the remainder of the time between now and fiscal year 06. We're also laying the groundwork in that baseline for the agreements that would follow after that in terms of continuing kind of efforts as all of us as partners to support the International Space Station. That's continuing well. And along the way, there has been no diminution whatsoever in their support. Absolutely, all of us have got challenges that we're wrestling with, and they do as well as our other partners do. But they have not diminished in any way. Last Monday, the Expedition 10 crew was announced. That's due for launch in October, and our Expedition 9 crew will be returning. I plan to be there to assure that gets observed, and we continue to work with our partners to accomplish this. But there is nothing but the highest professionalism I've seen there. The new Director General of the Russian Space Agency, Anatoly Permanov, has really done an astounding job of getting started right away and into the saddle immediately, and we haven't missed a beat with the partnership. So they've done an exemplary job, and we expect that there'll be a continuation of that performance.
Senator Breaux.
For your presentations, I'd like to just touch on, I think, what Senator Locke might have been referring to and others, in the sense that it seems to me that we got two challenges among others, and one is to pay for the past and also prepare to pay for the future. The past being, how do we fix the existing shuttle? How do we make sure the space station is working? And at the same time, with the limited amount of money, embark on new missions to Mars and new missions to the moon and a new vehicle. And it seems like we postponing fixing the past to pay for the future, and at the same time, we're shortchanging the future because of the cost of the past. I mean, I don't think this all adds up. I mean, we still got problems in the past, and that you're being challenged to go out with new launch vehicles and new missions to Mars and to the moon, and there's no extra money being requested for all of this. And it just doesn't add up from where I sit. That you're not going to be we're losing tiles in Cape Canaveral, but we're also still losing tiles on the shuttle. And that ain't fixed. So, I mean, you can't do it with the money you got. Now, you tell me how you can.
Well, sir, I think the budget request the president made in February of this year covers the costs we believe are necessary in order to return the space shuttle to flight. We've got additional costs that we've identified as part of this latest implementation plan. We can handle that. This is not a showstopper by any means. There are methods and different options we're looking at now to accomplish that. But the first major step is that the Congress would support the president's budget request. We are on our way. There are every indication that that may be problematic. The House Appropriations position a month and a half ago, would significantly diminish that capacity. It would make what you just said an absolute fact. We can't do this at the levels that they've contemplated. So as a consequence, this really is in concert with the Columbia Accident Investigation Board's report, in which they said the president has to establish a vision, has to establish a strategy, has to ask for the money necessary. Well, we did those three things. The next step that the Accident Investigation Board argued is that Congress has to support that. We're looking for that last step, and we appreciate your indulgence in getting there, but that's going to be the major effort in order to achieve this. At that point, we're talking about at the margin. Under the present conditions, if the House Appropriations Commission position goes forward, you're right. We cannot do this.
If the amount that the House has appropriated is the final amount appropriated to the agency, what would you have to slow down, cut back, or eliminate?
Boy, I think it significantly compromises the opportunity for the exploration agenda. The crew exploration vehicle is something that a whole constellation effort gets put in abeyance. The effort that we've really labored in the last couple of years to see a breakthrough in in-space propulsion through Project Prometheus is something I don't see any option in terms of proceeding with that. Our first primary objective is going to be to get the space shuttle back flying, to complete the International Space Station. That's agenda item number one. And return to flight, anything else beyond that, that's what we've got to focus on in order to achieve any of this under any combination of events. So it makes all those other efforts very, very much compromised.
Well, I mean, I think, Mr. Chairman and our colleagues, I mean, that really is the question. I mean, we can outline some very ambitious concepts about what we need to be doing, fixing the shuttle, fixing the space station, going back to to the moon, and then ultimately to Mars. But if we don't fund it, we can't do it. And we have a disconnect here between what we're giving them as a mission to do, which is very laudatory in public pronouncements, but if we don't support it, it's not going to be able to get done. Sure. And I think you heard the administrator say that there would have to be substantial changes in all of these missions if we don't do any more with the funding than what the House has contemplated. I mean, sure. you can't accomplish it with the tools that we're giving you in terms of appropriations, and that we're going to have to make a decision. What are our priorities? Is this one? If it is, we're going to have to step up to the plate with the necessary funding to do it, or we're going to have to drastically change the mission. So thank you all for the good job you're doing.
Well, thank you, Senator. I appreciate the illumination on the issue because it really is that imperative. And again, if the House position prevails, the clear position from the administration has been articulated is the president's senior advisors will recommend that he veto the bill, period.
Mr. Director, I feel like now we're getting somewhere, okay, on the discussion, because this is what I've looked at as well for some period of time, and I've been very strongly supportive of the president's exploration vision. I think that it's time on the manned space programs for us to really look beyond where we are right now. I think on the unmanned programs, you guys are doing a fabulous job. It seems like good vision, well established. It's being accomplished. Things are moving very well. So you kind of set that portfolio aside and say, great job from a policy point of view. policy point of view on the manned space program, though, you look at that and you, I think we're stuck too much paying for the legacy of the past and not projecting on into the future here. I mentioned at the outset here about looking at the shuttle. One outside group has said, do we need 30 more missions with the shuttle? Now, this is over the life expectancy of the shuttle. That's not this next budget year, which you're focused on, and I understand that. But if you look at what they're saying you can do this in 10 to 15 flights, not 30, if you offload a series of things. I know you've been looking at this internally as well. Looking on down the road, isn't it time we have that type of policy discussion of saying that the legacy cost of this is just too much, we have some other options, and we really need these funds to go into the next phase for human space flight, and try to really have that level of policy discussion of we're going to whittle these down to half the number so that we can get that money flowing towards the exploration vision the president articulated in the middle of January?
Yes, sir. What it comes down to is we've done a terrific job over the years of designing every one of these components and modules to fit precisely into the space shuttle cargo bay. It is the asset that gets it all there. It's lined up impressively. It's one of the facilities that rode out this hurricane with great skill. Is all those modules are lined up perfectly and going through testing.
I understand.
At Kennedy Space Center. That's the only way to get them there.
Yet the Planetary Society, and as I understand some of the internal discussions, were saying you could offload a number of these missions and get it down to 10 to 15. Have you looked at either their studies or your own internal ones that would say we could cut the number of shuttle missions in half?
With all due respect to the Planetary Society, we are desperately trying to accomplish the task of getting the modules we know are there through the means that is feasible to do, that's known. And anything we can offload in terms of logistics requirements, whatever else, we are actively exploring those alternatives now to see what kind of commercial servicing options may be pursued. We put out a request for information on that. The industry is examining that now. But I don't see a real significant diminution of the flight rate because it's just a sheer volume of hardware that fits exactly within the shuttle and there's no other means lift in order to accomplish that task that we know of. We'll continue to look at that constantly. This is an ever-moving effort. And our friends in the International Space Station Partnership, their only interest is not how does it get there, that it does get there. They are agnostic to the question of exactly how it's accomplished. And so the means by which we achieve that goal is the objective, and we're constantly looking for new ways to do that.
We will continue that discussion. General Stafford, I want to ask you something on heavy lift capacity, because this is something else that we've wrestled with here for some period of time, and I don't mean to put another issue on the agenda, but as we do budget these things on out, you chaired a study, gosh, that's over a decade ago, and thank you for your continuous service to this government and your repository of knowledge that you continue to provide to us. But you said then that we were... experience has shown that large liquid hydrogen and oxygen engines have been expensive to develop and operate. Oxygen hydrogen belt is not an attractive option for the first stage of heavy lift launch vehicle because of the large tank volume and safety concerns of using hydrogen below an altitude of 100,000 feet. I don't mean to drag you back to a decade-old report. You probably know this well, but aren't we at a stage now we really need to be focusing on different or better options for heavy lift capacity as well as we look forward into the future?
Well, we were looking at the time set that I chaired the synthesis group, sir, to look forward, and one of the key efforts for exploration is a large mass to low Earth orbit, and from that it takes a heavy lift. And we were looking at the lessons learned from Apollo. We're looking at lessons, and he had inputs from academia, from industry all over. And at the time, it said for the first stage, for volumetric efficiency, was probably still the LOX or something like that, and with kerosene. And the upper stages would certainly be a very high efficiency with hydrogen and oxygen. Now, things have progressed since then. You can use booster stages on the side, but the main criteria is a large mass to low Earth orbit, Mr. Chairman.
Have we Have we accomplished that? Are we getting the heavy lift capacity now that we need?
Well, the only heavy lift capacity that exists in the United States today is the elements from the space shuttle. And if there's been, you know, certain ideas put forth, like the Shuttle C at one time, that was back in the 90s, and that would put about 140 to 170,000 pounds, if I'm correct, into low Earth orbit. The Saturn V at the peak put about 300,000 pounds when the third stage shut off, and then to escape velocity was approximately 120,000 pounds.
I'm concerned we've not addressed adequately this, and this is a big issue as well, moving.
Yes, sir.
Exploration, and this is one as an issue has been around for some period of time.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman, and I agree. We have to have a heavy lift for a large mass to low Earth orbit.
Senator Nelson,
which brings us back to the policy question, Mr. Chairman, that Senator.